This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. State lawmakers are back in session a week from today, and one item on their agenda is an overhaul of how the state pays for schools. Carrie Dahlman will be following developments closely. She's in her first year as president of the Colorado Education Association, the union that represents nearly 40,000 teachers and other school staff in the state. Dahlman's making the rounds trying to convince lawmakers that schools need more money. Meanwhile, she's elbow deep in making sure a new way of evaluating teachers is fair. We're checking in with Carrie Dahlman today and her very full plate. Carrie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And I'd like to start with the new teacher evaluation law. It's being implemented in some districts now. It'll take effect statewide in 2014. This was a controversial law that partially ties a teacher's evaluation to student test scores. Your union's been very involved in piloting these evaluations. Can you give us a snapshot of how a teacher, let's say Miss Brown, who teaches math, would be evaluated?
Well, Mrs. Brown's evaluation is going to be divided into two halves. 50% of her evaluation is going to be based on how her students perform on the state assessment, as well as other student assessments that may be given in her class or at a district level.
Throughout the year. Yeah.
And the other half of her evaluation is going to be based on her principal coming in and observing her in her classroom on such things as her content knowledge and how she delivers that content knowledge to her students, the kind of learning environment she establishes in her classroom, how she reflects on her practice, and the leadership that she takes within her role as the fourth grade math teacher.
And so there will be visits by a principal to the classroom to observe Mrs. Brown's teaching. It may be that Ms. Brown might produce lesson plans or her work product, I guess, and that would be evaluated.
Absolutely, because, you know, the principal's there to observe what is observable. The other part of the evaluation are things that aren't observable. So she'll have artifacts that she is able to provide to her evaluator, and those artifacts could be something as simple as surveying her students or a parent survey or exemplars of student work that she's assigned.
That's so funny. I don't think of evaluating a teacher, at least letting the students do that, outside of college. But this is bringing that presumably to K-12 in some way.
Absolutely. Huh. Yeah.
You know, our education reporter, Jenny Brundine, has spoken to kids who have admitted they didn't care about the big test. They didn't try one year or another. I want to play some tape from a student. This is Majid Abdullah, who in the seventh grade decided he didn't like school, he wasn't going to try. In this case, his teacher lost her job because scores at the school were low. It was a turnaround school, and many of the teachers were not asked back when a new principal came on board. Now, this teacher was definitely not blaming the kids, but Majid felt he should apologize to her.
Sorry that you're losing your job because of kids like me not trying, and if it was up to me, you wouldn't be losing your job because you really are a good teacher. It's just that I wasn't trying hard or anything. None of the kids were.
How do you plan for that? How do you make room for that? Are you tearing up?
I am.
Why does that strike you?
Every teacher wants to help light that passion for learning in their students. And it's entirely possible that on most every day that teacher did that for Majid, but Majid didn't see the connection between that test or that assessment and the work he was doing with his teacher every day in his classroom.
So if there is, of course, free will among children to zone out or focus in, how do you account for that in an evaluation?
I think it's difficult. I don't want to excuse the teacher's responsibility to engage their students at a deep level. I mean, we really do. We have to excite that passion for learning in all of our students.
And that connection to the test, I suppose.
Well, yes. Without teaching to the test, because when you get so focused on bubbling in and you forget about those higher order critical thinking skills, then I think we're really doing a disservice to our students. I mean, the test is supposed to be a measure of what they've learned, not a measure of how well they take tests.
It sounds like there's not a concrete answer.
I don't think that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think the process of having a teacher be evaluated on their professional practices that they employ every day in their classroom with their students is so critical. You can't just look at a test and say, that's a good teacher or that's a bad teacher.
So this big new evaluation system is about to roll out statewide. What are you hearing from teachers?
Well, in our trainings across the state, teachers come into our training with a lot of anxiety. What does it all mean?
This training, this is something you've developed specifically around the new law?
Yes.
Okay.
And what teachers tell us is they have a lot of anxiety going in. They don't really understand the components of this new law and how that will impact them and the work they do in their classroom. But what we find is when we ask them to really take a deep dive into what that evaluation is going to look like and the standards they're going to be evaluated against.
And the fact that it's multifaceted, you know.
And the fact that it's multifaceted, they begin to understand it and for the first time have a map that says this is what's expected of me as I teach over the course of a year, over the course of a career.
That's not something they felt they had before?
It's not something that they've had before. What's unique about this law is that we're moving from a system where teachers were evaluated once every 3 years if they were non-probationary. Now they're going to be evaluated once every year. And there's a lot of benefit to that. And then there's a lot of capacity issues to that as well.
Well, right, because that requires time. It probably requires money. It's a lot to ask a principal or an assistant principal to do, especially because a lot of those administrative positions have been scaled back.
Absolutely. And that's why you see some districts in Colorado heavily investing in peer evaluation and peer observation.
Teachers doing this for other teachers.
Yes.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we are meeting, what I think is safe to say still, the new head of the Colorado Education Association, Carrie Dahlman, has been on the job for about 6 months. The CEA represents nearly 40,000 teachers, bus drivers, also secretaries, cafeteria workers, the list goes on. Let's talk about school funding. Educators were relieved that 2012 was the first year in four that deep cuts weren't proposed. But after accounting for inflation and more students in schools, the governor's budget only has about $31 million in new money for schools next year. You've said it does little to repair the damage of the past 4 years.
Well, even as a high school social studies teacher, I can do the math. We've cut more than $1 billion over the last 4 years, $1 billion, and the governor has $31 million more in additional funding for public schools. That's a 3% drop in the bucket.
What's the long-term solution, in your opinion? Is it a tax? Is it constitutional reform?
All of the above. We have a constitutional Gordian knot with how Tabor and Gallagher and Amendment 23 all intersect. I think we have a responsibility to try to untie those conflicting pieces of law.
Will you push for an effort to do that this session?
I will work to support efforts to rewrite the School Finance Act. And I will work with members of my organization to put something on the ballot in 2013 that will increase funding for our schools. I would like to see larger commitment to untying that Gordian knot.
And so that ballot measure in 2013, would it attempt to do both, undo the Gordian knot and ask for new revenue for education?
In an ideal world, yes. I think in a real world, it's difficult to achieve all of that on one ballot.
Yeah. Of course, the single subject rule may mean those have to be two separate things.
Yes.
What would you imagine the stream of new funding would be?
Some of it, I think, is going to be a tax increase or different tax rates on the state income tax. I don't have the answer. We're certainly willing to engage in a much broader conversation to come up with that answer, because what I can tell you is teachers alone aren't going to pass something. It'll be teachers working with parents, working with business in this state, and hopefully working with Governor Hickenlooper to come up with a solution.
You know, I think back to a measure that was recently on the ballot, Proposition 103, that failed, and it had everything to do with education funding. How do you set a different course of history this time?
I don't think voters were clear on where the money for Proposition 103 was going to go. I think the fact that there's an effort now underway with Senator Michael Johnston and Senator Raleigh Heath to rewrite the School Finance Act, I think that that will help provide voters greater confidence in where money will end up.
Well, let's talk about that, because we do know a bit more about what's expected to be the major education bill of the upcoming session. And it is a full-scale remodeling of the way schools are funded, focused on increasing overall funding, for sure, but targeting more money to individual schools rather than funneling dollars through districts. How long has it been since the School Finance Act was updated?
Around 20 years, 20-plus years. I mean, we have an equity problem and an adequacy problem.
Let's deal with those separately. We have an equity problem. What do you mean by that?
We have communities in Colorado who can very easily go to their local voters and pass a mill to increase local funding for their school districts. We have other communities, and I'll use Greeley as an example, that has an incredibly difficult time passing a local mill levy in order to fund its school system.
Simply because of the views of the voters.
The views of the voters, absolutely, and the economics of a particular area.
And so the idea that you're proposing here is that if communities are indeed forced to rely on local revenues, some are going to be better funded than others just because of the different complexion.
I think in our current system, absolutely.
Okay. And then you also talk about adequacy. So that's just dollars, period.
Yeah, that's dollars, period. Our Constitution requires thorough and uniform funding. We have a ruling in the Lobato case, which is currently under appeal at the Colorado Supreme Court, that says we've not been funding our school system thoroughly and uniformly. In order to do that, that's going to require an additional investment in our public school system across the state of Colorado.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Carrie Dahlman is president of the Colorado Education Association. She spoke to us ahead of the legislative session, which begins a week from today.